Welcome back. Trailblazing St. Louis comedian Dick Gregory died last Saturday at the age of 84. To refer to him only as a comedian is just telling part of the story. He was an effective civil rights activist who used the platform comedy gave him to give volume to his lifelong activism. It began as a teenager. A star high school athlete, his first protest came while attending Sumner High School, just part of his St. Louis upbringing, which he discussed with host Mike Sampson in 2003. Caution, there is some language here that some might find objectionable.
I came from St. Louis, Missouri.
Sure.
You know, poverty-stricken ghetto. I thought good nutrition when whatever you was eating didn't run out till you got enough, and bad nutrition is when it did.
You lived up on North Taylor.
North Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting. I was real skinny as a child. Now, you think people scared of AIDS? Try TB.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ. I mean, they sent me to a special school because students and teachers were scared to be around me.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm old, and I said, well, why didn't y'all just get me checked, you know, and find out?
That'd be so easy.
You know, and in the process of doing that, I just liked, you know, food that tasted good to me. And then one day, you know, I end up weighing 365 pounds.
Oh, man.
You don't feel it. You know, it's not like one day you weigh 90 pounds, next day you weigh 365 pounds. It
just where you'd notice.
So gradual. You
mm-hmm.
know? And then I started wanting to do something for world hunger.
Mm-hmm.
My conscious level started here in St. Louis. I resented the fact I was poor. I resented the fact that the school system didn't seem to work right. And one day I just started running. I used to hang out at Forest Park. And so I always, that's where I lost my white Christian work ethic, watching them gorillas eat every day and no job. So I said, wait a minute, hold it. If you feel this way about a gorilla, I know you feel better about me. And then, you know, St. Louis is one of the few zoos that had a boa constrictor, the big snake. And I didn't realize that when you capture a boa constrictor, rather than live in captivity, they will starve themselves to death. And so twice a year, they would take a ramrod and ram tons of hamburger meat down in their throat. And so I'm looking at this snake having... I mean, I'm hungry. I can't even find nobody to bring me some food.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was that sensitivity, the sensitive teachers, some of them, coming up in a rigidly segregated area. We didn't know what prejudice was because segregation was so rough you didn't even get past to the other.
Sure. In your book, you talk about your mom cleaning white folks' homes and she being two different people, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Back on North Taylor, she's one person, and then in the white folks' home, she's someone entirely different.
And then to look at black men, it's even worse. A black man back then was a boy. I knew black men that would have Cadillacs and would park them six blocks from work because they felt if those white folks saw them, they'd fire them. Now, I say felt because all white folks wouldn't fire. You just didn't know which ones would. And, you know, you'd hear black fathers saying, you know, boy, I'm not going to take this off you. And at work, they was wimping and white folk goose them in their butt and rubbing their head for luck. And
mm-hmm.
and they took it. We were told by the older folks that you had to do this to feed the family. And as a father of 10 black children and been married 43 years. I think death is better. I think in the eyesight of God, it's a violation for a person to stoop below the dignity that God gave them just so they can pay the rent or feed the family. I think that's a violation of God. And I think one day we black folk going to be in for an awful rude awakening. You got a lot of black folk think we're going to heaven. And a lot of white folk going to hell. They're going to be in for a rude awakening when they find out the violation that I violated. If you look at the stats of black folks, African Americans in America today is less than 12% of America's population. As we sit in now, 87% of everybody on kidney dialysis machines in America is black folks. They're not even aware of those numbers. I mean, so I said, well, God, you praying to? God is real, and prayers work, so what are you doing wrong? You violate every day by stooping below the dignity that I, your God, put in you just so you can feed a family. you below the dignity when you go to work and lie to white folks and say what you think they want you to say. And there's something wrong with a group of people that produce people to go all over the world for a government and kill people, then come back and a racist cop and shot your mom in the back and you want to march. There's something wrong with that. And growing up and seeing my mother do that and then go to work with her and hear him call her gal and never called her by her name. And so one day, you know, I just started running. Mm-hmm. having fun just by myself running. And started running at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I noticed the longer I ran, the more people looked at me. And so one day I started running at 4 o'clock in the morning and kept running till 4 o'clock that evening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I didn't know is, like, let's see, I'm running around your square block. So now at 4 o'clock, there's nobody out there. And then at 5 o'clock, people's waking up. Between 6 and 7, they go to work, so I really show off then. So when you come back home, you know, I hadn't been running that fast. You know, running long and running fast is two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I see people coming, I pick up the pace.
Oh, I see.
I didn't realize, you know, what I was getting my body ready for, because one day I would tail it. There was a streetcar before we had buses, and I would chase the streetcar. It's kind of interesting because the streetcar comes through the black neighborhood, and it's predominantly all black. And then it goes through the white neighborhoods, predominantly all white. And so I had two different audiences waving and looking.
And it should be said that you were a darn good runner.
Well,
a fast runner.
Well, that's
that was
what I'm saying now. That's how I developed that. I didn't know that. You see, I was the first black in the history of America to win a state cross-country championship when even black folks had been convinced that genetically we couldn't run the long distance. So when I won and set the world's record, I didn't get credit because St. Louis had a dual school system. Black, if you were black Negro, then you went to Jefferson City. If you went to a white school, you went up to the University of Missouri. So I was at the school that didn't get the credit. So we hooked up with the NAACP and led demonstrations and school strikes, and that's when they signed executive order to integrate cross-country. Then I became the first black in the history of America to win a state cross-country championship. I'm a good example of knocking a white child out of school. I left St. Louis in 1952 to go to Southern Illinois University.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you couldn't find a more racist institution than Southern Illinois University. There were more racist ones, but blacks couldn't get in them.
Right.
So I go down there, and let me tell you what my grades looked like in high school. It scanned the whole alphabet, right? Except the top part, I don't know. Look,
uh-huh.
If a teacher,
you had a couple of Q's on there.
If a teacher would have put an A anywhere, I would have reported her to the FBI or him, right? Mm-hmm. And so consequently, I was the third fastest half mile in the nation, so nobody talked about how many white slots are you taking. And they don't talk about it now. As long as a black athlete is willing to outrun God with a football on Saturday, there's no such thing as you knocking somebody out. All my life, I watched that bus with them white children pass by me and go 5 miles outside of town to a good school, and they called it busing. Now, when it comes my turn, it's called forced busing. And, you know, you think about how nice black folks have been to this country. We've done stuff. I really believe this, that if white folks had to go through for 24 hours what black folks have gone through for 400 years, they'd burn this country down to the ground.
Dick Gregory is with us today. We have a bunch of people waiting on the phone, so let's cruise through a couple of those calls. Phyllis has been hanging on in Maplewood. Phyllis, you're on KWMU.
Hi, it's great to be on, Mike. You're doing a great job on the show.
Oh,
good
morning. You're too kind.
Good morning, Phyllis.
Oh,
God bless
good morning,
you.
Mr. Gregory. It's so good to hear your voice.
Thank
and to talk to you personally.
Thank
well,
you.
I saw you back in the late 60s when I was in college.
That was me.
Yep, and you said, it was right after they'd done the heart transplant, and you said, that does not interest me, a black man's heart in a white man's body. Now, if they put a black man's foot on a white man's body, I want to see that. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, because I said, I'd get me some white feet, and when I go to get employed, I just put my foot in the door.
And I just feel so happy to be
Thank
alive
you.
At the same time that you're alive
oh,
and
that's
to see
kind.
how the path of your life went and my life has gone in some similar kinds of twists and turns. And then I saw you in person last year at SIUE talking to those young people and eating your fruit before you went on stage. And then you talked for over 2 hours, and you would have kept on at least 2 hours more, but they stopped you.
Like going to a Springsteen concert, Phyllis.
Yeah. Sorry?
It's like going to a Springsteen concert.
I don't know. I never got into Springsteen, but I got into Dick Gregory. So now next week, here I am. I'm going to be I took early retirement from teaching because I got in touch with some of the universal spiritual principles, like what you talk about.
Yes.
And that took me to Bulgaria and traveling around the world. But next week I'm going to start working at one of the city schools with young teenagers from all over the world, from Bosnia and different countries.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
It's important to share with the young people. So what words of wisdom do you have for me as I go into this?
Well, just remember, we live in a country that's less than 6% of the world's population, but we consume 89% of the world's hard drugs because we almost don't qualify to say nothing to nobody. Every 4 seconds we've been talking around the clock, a woman in America gets beat up by her boyfriend or husband, not strangers. And we're not even talking about alcohol. Jesus Christ, we lose more people from drunken driving than we lose in war. And so consequently, I think it's very difficult to talk to young folks today because of television. We have totally underestimated the mindset with television. If you look at the black movement, never before in the history of this planet have anyone made the progress that African Americans have made in a 30-year period, in spite of black folks and white folks being dishonored. But it was television. You know, one of the big problems we as African Americans have in America is white folks don't seem to raise their voice about police brutality. So now, are we lying? I mean, we never said the Marines beat me up, or we never said that the Red Cross attacked me. So is there some great conspiracy where all we do is lie on cops? Well, one of the reasons, now I can understand, but I don't understand how come America don't take my word for it, not me as a black, is white folks don't brutalize me, and most white folks ain't never seen me brutalized. And so consequently, this number one problem, give you a hypothetical situation. Colin Powell's in New York at the UN today. His wife is and a friend is there. Hypothetical now. His wife and a friend is there. They're going to see some plays. He's staying at the hotel with the UN with all security. His wife and their friends are staying in at the Waldorf. Coming back from a play, an emergency vehicle goes out of control, hits her. She got a fractured skull. They call him at his hotel. They don't know if she's going to live or die. He runs downstairs they tell her she's at Columbia Presbyterian, and he runs downstairs only to find out that a Negro can't get a cab in New York. You know, he might be one of the most powerful human beings in the world, but he is a Negro. And so he turns to the bellman and says, "How far is Columbia Presbyterian?" And it said it's 2 blocks straight ahead and then a half block to the right. And he takes off running. I mean, this is my wife. And he's praying and he's saying, "Oh, God, if she have to die, let her live long enough for me just to tell her I love her." And he's in this whole state, and here these three racist cops turn the corner and they don't see Colin Powell. They see a nigga running. Mm. And when they say, "Stop, nigga," he don't hear this. Choke hold and he dead. And all the world will be outraged when they wake up in the morning, but call Colin Powell, but just any ordinary black person, you know, like until we can be upset back in Nazi or any Jew, then it don't make no difference. And so, you know, the young folks that's coming in here, and I say all this to say, because of television today, that's how our movement moved. White folks who might not give a black person the time of the day, but in their living room seeing a dog attack a child, seeing the hatred on white folks' face. And that's what turned it around. It was that television set. So you got young folks today. I couldn't wait to be drafted because my war represented John Wayne. It was the movie version. And them bodies in bags in your living room, and you hear them young soldiers out there screaming, "Mama," and yelling and hollering, and war is not romantic. And so I just say you have a hard job, but just be honest with them. And remember, it's not about love. It's about being lovable. Once you become lovable, then the whole world is safe. And just be honest with them and listen to them, and it'll work. Thank you.
Phyllis, good luck to you.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you much.
St. Louis on the Air on 90.7 KWMU. Donna's been hanging out there at North County Tech High School. Donna, welcome to KWMU.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you both.
God bless you and the family. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I'm wondering, Mr. Gregory, if you know how many students, middle school, high school, and college level, university level students, have read that particular excerpt from your autobiography.
Yes.
It's called Shame.
Shame, yes.
I have used it at SMSU in Springfield,
yes.
Middle schools and this high school now. We just read your essay this week, well, also last semester,
yes.
The semester before that.
Mm-hmm.
But each time I use it for something different.
Mm.
Most, my favorite is for the power of words.
Yes.
Because this vehicle that you have given me, you know, you can make them weep. And we talk about the bravery it takes to write the truth.
Yes.
And I feel as though I almost know so much of that small piece of
yes.
your writing by heart. And then once I am sure that the kids have had enough time to feel the power of your words, then we take some time and go back and look at the structure
Great.
And the writing
yes.
techniques. And this intelligent, organized mind that put this together. It wasn't really an accident.
Not at all.
And I just want to thank you so much.
Let me reveal
so
something to you you might not know. Dutton commissioned me to do that. I mean,
oh, really?
Like $200,000 advance. And
uh-huh.
it was guaranteed to do about $10 million because at that time I was like the hottest entertainer in the country.
Yes.
So they thought they was dealing with a comedian, so the contract they kind of messed up, and they really wanted a humor book. So they were devastated. So then they said, well, do me a favor. Over the weekend, think of a nice humorous title. So what they really wanted me to do was trick white folks, make them think they was getting humor. So I said, well, I'm a fargo. One of the things I did, I went out, and I said with my wife, I said, now, somewhere we're going to lose a lot of money on this book, but I'm going to do two things. I'm going to teach them by trying to trick people, so we're going to name the book Nigger.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I'm going to take this word and defang it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just happy today to see where it's gone. I mean, I'm a little sad and during the O.J. trial that white America got so uncomfortable and black folks let them that they changed the word to the N-word. Can you imagine one day black folks getting so embarrassed about having been lynched that they let the system change the word to the L word, or Jews getting so crazy and insane and embarrassed over what Hitler and them Nazis, they changed the word swastika to the S word and the word concentration camp to the C word. Consequently, I had no idea. This book sells 4.5 million copies every year. I had no idea that it would sell the way it sells and have the effect that it have.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did, I went and I said, now I want a white person to write this with me, because the story I have to tell, black folks know. But I don't want a vernacular. You know, I have gone across Jewish comics and they were so Yiddish, I didn't understand what they were saying. I had mm-hmm. no sense to laugh when everybody else did. And so that's what we were able to do. And he hung out with me and got angry with me and he got ready to quit. I said, you ready now? And it was that, you know, one of the big shocks to my life on the Jack Paar show, I was the first Negro that was permitted to sit down on the couch. Now, I didn't know that. I knew one day I was going to get on the Paar show. That's just your head.
Sure.
And I knew once I got on it, my life was over. I didn't know if you don't sit on the couch, then you're not one of the regulars.
Oh.
And so when I sit on the couch and was talking about my children, I got thousands of letters from white folks saying, I didn't know black children and white children were the same. You know, and so it's this whole educational period that we have gone through. And then you look at, for instance, periods where things shifted. The big shift after slavery, Reconstruction, and then the big shift after that, was Jackie Robinson. But now think about it. Not Super Bowl, no such thing. Mm-hmm. Not basketball. White America's game was baseball. And a white man named Branch Rickey said, hey, I'm going to bring you up because it's right. And he knew he could die, that he could never get a job again, but he brought him up because it was right. And the psychic had never been the same. Then the next thing happened after that was the murder of Emmett Till. And his mother being nice enough in the midst of all that tragedy to open up the coffin and let the world see what had happened. And it's kind of interesting. 100 days after that picture went around the world, Rosa Parks made worldwide news. And somebody asked her, why'd you do that? She said, I just couldn't get Emmett Till's picture out of my mind. So it's amazing how one thing leads to another and to another.
St. Louis-born comic Dick Gregory on a 2003 interview on St. Louis on the Air with Mike Sampson. Gregory made some history on television. He was the first black entertainer invited to sit on the couch on Jack Parr's old Tonight Show.